Welcome to Creative Piecemeal Podcast, a podcast for creatives. I'm your host, Tami Takeishi. Join me for compelling conversations with artists, actors, authors, musicians, and other creatives about the impact of the creative and fine arts in their lives and our ever-changing world. Thank you for listening. Hello and welcome to Creative Piecemeal Podcast. I'm Tami, and today I'm joined by Chris P. James. He's one of the members of the country rock band Burrito Brothers. They recently released a new album on December 1st called Christmas. It's a mix of original as well as covers, and it definitely rocks, gets you in the holiday spirit. But for those of you who may not be familiar, the band was formed originally in 1968 in Los Angeles as the Flying Burrito Brothers, with the lineup featuring Graham Parsons, Chris Hellman, Michael Clark, and Bernie Leadon, as well as Sneaky Pete Kleinow, a pedal steel guitar genius. Since then, the band has gone through a few different iterations and lineups, but this particular lineup featuring Chris and his bandmates Steve Allen, Tony Pauletta, and Peter Young are keeping the legacy alive and making new music, and of course, this new country album that just recently released. So, hello and welcome to the show.
Hello. Glad to be here, Tami. Thank you for doing it.
Oh, my pleasure. I was telling one of my friends about this upcoming interview. And she goes, oh, are they the same as the Flying Burrito Brothers? And I said, yes, but it's a new version.
Yeah, to say the least, when you said they've had some personnel changes, there might not be very many bands that have had as many. Through the years, this band has changed year after year after year. And it's amazing that it just keeps going. In a way, that's really neat, though, because each time it gets infused with new blood, that new version of the group goes out and needs to prove themselves that they, you know, they've got it too. And we felt pretty strongly about that. We believe in the legacy we're hanging on to and taking part in. This nucleus has probably been together roughly a decade, in a couple of us longer. It's found we really have our feet under us as far as knowing what we want to do when we record albums, and feel real good about this Christmas album.
Yeah, I really like it. And I'm one of those people that I listen to Christmas music pretty much nonstop after Thanksgiving.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
So it's nice to have some new stuff in the holiday lineup.
Well, this is absolutely new. It's really not at all like the traditional, usual Christmas album that most artists make, because it's not a collection of familiar songs. It's predominantly original, except for a couple. Well, there's four that we didn't write, and they're left field choices, except for probably one of them. We did Buck Owens, his Santa Looked a Lot Like Daddy is such a classic for Bakersfield country rock origins. I'm certain that Graham Parsons and Chris Hillman knew that song when they started the band, because Buck Owens and Bakersfield music was a large part of the formula of what they were chasing. It was a hybrid. It wasn't country really, although it sounded a little bit more like country than rock, but it was definitely a version of that music that was aimed at a sort of the hippie crowd of the day. This would have been 1968-69. Like, they played at Altamont with the Rolling Stones, and they played rock venues, and they were marketed as a rock group, the original Flying Burrito Brothers. And it really always has been a country rock group, with, in my mind, when I hear what we've done in the last 10 years or so, I think rock has a stronger part of the equation than the word country. But it's certainly got a country flavor, and it's got that pedal steel guitar, which is a very interesting element to put into a rock band, so that gives it that country flavor.
There a favorite Christmas song that you enjoy that didn't make it to the album?
Oh, you know, it's funny, whenever I was sort of as just the kid who played piano in the family, and maybe sometime in informal settings around Christmas time, partly because it was kind of easy chord wise, but I always like to play Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas.
Oh,
I like that
yeah.
song a lot. And we have one on this album that almost qualifies as that. The opening song is called Christmas Day, and I first heard it on Glen Campbell's 1968 That Christmas Feeling album. And it was the song that closed the album. I just loved that song and was surprised through the years that I've never heard anyone else do it. And so I thought it appropriate to include in our Christmas album. In fact, we use it as the opener. And we put a little sound bite at the beginning. It's Graham Parsons wishing people Merry Christmas, because he's, if anybody, he's the biggest iconic member of the group. He's the bedrock cornerstone guy from way back when. And also he's a cult legend because he died young, is well remembered. He was a friend of Keith Richard. That was a kind of a calling card, so to speak.
Yeah. I remember listening to that and I didn't recognize the speaking voice. I was like, oh, I wonder who that is, at the beginning in that sound bite, so.
Yeah, it's Graham Parsons. And it's even more obvious on the video because there's an animated Graham saying it with his lips moving and everything. And I love it. It's really neat. We've got some videos for this that are my favorite by far of any videos I've done. It's like we graduated to a newer level of not only better quality, but more fun. We had a lot of fun with it.
That's excellent. I would love to backtrack a little bit. What got you started on your musical journey?
It sort of just was in our household. My father is a musician. Was he died last year. He was a trumpet player in a lot of bands. He was always in bands, even though that wasn't his first career. He would have been technically regarded as an amateur, as in to be a pro, that means it's your profession, and it wasn't, but he was always playing music. I mean, the most active amateur I've ever known. And somehow it just was in our household all the time, and all four of his sons just picked up playing music. And I've come to realize in later years that it was just that it seemed so natural, so regular, so easy. It was always around, and so it didn't seem foreign or something hard to grasp. It just was sort of something you do, it seemed like. And so just kind of went from there. I remember kind of, I hope, and I'm confident that it wasn't a conceit, but I always felt when I got out in the world as an adult that I just kind of knew how to do this. And that was a comfort. It was a really nice thing to carry with you, because I've met a lot of people who struggle, and how many times I've been greeted at a show or something by people going, "You're so lucky you can play. I wish I could play piano," stuff like that. I used to, when I was real young, used to kind of try to explain it and say, "Well, I worked and I had to learn and blah, blah, blah." I realized later, no, you just say thank you. You say thank you. That, yeah, it is nice, and I am lucky.
Was there ever an instrument that you wish you had learned but didn't, like in addition to the ones you already know?
No, I don't think so. I think music was just follow the path. It was what presented. I suppose I could kind of claim that I wish I played guitar better, because I like strumming guitar. Being the front man, lead singer of the current Burrito Brothers, it's really kind of nice sometimes to not be behind a piano and get out front and sing a song. And it's real nice to strum the rhythm guitar while doing so. And I've gotten capable of doing that for quite a number of years now. But I never really explored like becoming a real guitar player, taking solos and digging real deep, because keyboards were my main instrument, along with singing. And I don't regret it at all. I think that was just the choice I made. I don't wish I played better guitar in any sad way. I mean, if that makes any sense.
I was just curious, if there was that ever an instrument that you were always interested in.
I kind of went after what I was interested in learning, I think. I play some harmonica and I learned how to do that. I could put it this way. I kind of do know how to play other instruments. I can play some guitar. I've made recordings where I play everything on them. I'm a pretty good drummer, which is kind of a strange thing because you either can or you can't. It's a sense of rhythm. And I've noticed that actually is another thing that's true of all my brothers. They're just, I guess it's just an innate blessing, sense of rhythm. I feel like because I have some aptitude for things like that, for guitar and drums and even bass, harmonica, had I chosen it as my principal focus, I could have done any one of those because I have like a child's aptitude for it, if that makes sense, you know. And the one I did pursue and learn to be professional level at is piano and keyboards and organ.
If you've been feeling burned out, stressed, overwhelmed, or exhausted, the resources and courses at the Self-Care Institute are here to support you. The Self-Care Institute was founded by Dr. Ami Kunimura and provides support for individuals and organizations with burnout prevention, burnout recovery, and stress management. I've personally taken a few of these courses and found them to be super helpful, both professionally and personally. The care you give yourself matters just as much as the care you give to others. But if self-care is difficult for you, you're not alone. And the Self-Care Institute is here to support your well-being, resilience, and sense of fulfillment at work and at home. For more information, visit selfcareinstitute.com or go to the show notes and click on the link. Yeah, I'm also a piano player like that. That was what I started on growing up. I'm assuming you had to learn some of the classics, right?
No, I'm way more like self-taught. I remember it was almost like this validation that so many kids my age and a little older, and like in a 20-year period where your coming of age was between 60 to 1980, somewhere in there, it was sort of validated by this notion that the Beatles all claimed to be self-taught. They didn't really read music. And here's the greatest band of all, and they did it. So it must be okay. And so that's what I, like I say, my father was a wonderful influence, but he never was a taskmaster. It just came as a result of just feeling like, well, it's always around. I guess people just do this thing. We just learned at our own paces. I have one brother who did take lessons and learn more formally, but two of my brothers and myself, we just kind of got better as we kept doing it. You know, it's ear and heart.
Very true, very
And you
true.
do learn a lot of, you know, if you stay with it that long, you do learn what's what there. I mean, I can make sense out of musical notation. I don't read it just like an ace, orchestra player or something, but I've actually gotten some gigs when I was younger where I told them, I don't sight read right then and there, but if that's not necessary, you can give me the music and I'll come back tomorrow and know it. You know, I can decipher it, so to speak.
Obviously, you've done music for most of your life, and then you landed in the Burrito Brothers. But what was that like, joining that group and joining that legendary lineup?
Absolutely a dream come true. It was just the best thing that could happen for me, and it's a blessing that I appreciate no end. And here's why, because I got in 15 years ago. I had first played, I'm 68 years old now, and I had first played in 1986, lucked into being on one of their shows. At that year, at that point in time, the Burrito Brothers were just two guys. It was sort of like as if that was the Everly Brothers or the Bellamy Brothers, the Burrito Brothers, you know. It was Gib Gilboa and John Belen. And they played a show that was a tribute to Gram Parsons, which in fact was a point in time when Gram Parsons really wasn't known. He's come to be a cult figure and really well known now. But at that time, the guy who put on this tribute, named Argyle Bell here in Nashville, was wanting to bring notice to a guy he thought was well worth it and rather unknown. Because the truth is, none of Graham's recordings ever sold well in his lifetime. They've turned out to be classics that continue to stay in print and sell through the years and have become the kind of thing that's on Rolling Stone's 500 greatest albums and stuff. But they weren't hits in their day. They were underground, wouldn't quite call them failures, but they weren't anything that big. And so here in 86, for whatever reason, the Burrito Brothers, like still now in 2023, always kept going. They'd have personnel changes and keep going. Somebody always wanted them. A label would offer a deal or a promoter would offer a tour. I was in the backup house band for any of these groups or singers that night who didn't have a backup band. And since the Burrito Brothers were only two guys, they used the house band to fill out the sound. And so from that day on, I was able to claim on my resume that I'd played in the Burrito Brothers. And it did work like a charm because I got a lot of gigs out of it. Because, obviously there were plenty of other interesting artists on that night. And then there were five straight years of that show annually, and I was called back each time. So this got me sort of into that circle. And I started playing once in a while, maybe once a year if I'm lucky, something that had to do with Burrito Brothers. And finally, having been waiting in the wings, so to speak, I got asked to join in 2009. The funny thing was, it was a new reconstitution of the band at that time. And nobody was leader. And I was pretty willing. There's a funny thing about that too. A lot of people don't want to be leader. It's headaches and you have to deal with stuff. The label said, before we'll complete this deal, you have to register the name, you have to obtain trademark copyright to the name the Burrito Brothers. And I had never done anything like that before. But I thought, well, okay, if that's what's asked, I'll look into it. And strange but true, it was available. And I filed and got it to sort of make a longer story a little shorter. And being the age I was by then, I mean, even 15 years ago, I'm no real youngster. Country music and rock music is looking for the latest 20-something cute guy star, or cute rock group stars. And so that window kind of passed for me. And to get to do this, to be in the Burrito Brothers, a legacy group with a real good reputation at that age, is a blessing. It's a dream come true. It's because there's not all that many of those kind of opportunities offered to 50-something age people. So yeah, it was a dream come true.
That's fantastic. And like we mentioned earlier, the Christmas album recently out, available to purchase everywhere. But what was it like recording a Christmas album? Because I imagine you did it not during the holiday because you had to get it ready by then. Was it kind of strange?
Oh, it's interesting. I told people, I was just telling my wife yesterday, I'm going to remember 2023 as being the year that was Christmas all year because it was January of this year that it hit me. I think it's just still kind of warm overall. It was early January, just really on the heels of last Christmas. I thought, a lot of our stuff is, I think, as good as anybody out there. I think we are an absolutely great band. I think you're supposed to believe that, or you might as well hang it up. I also am painfully aware of the fact that we seem to hover under the radar. And no matter how good we are, no matter how excellent music we make, there's still this sort of uphill struggle of hoping we can reach a wide audience because I think before even listening, a lot of people just write it off as not their favorite cute new kid or they're too old. I don't know. There's various reasons. I wish people would just listen to how good we are because we stack up next to anybody. But anyway, with that in mind, with us still, my desire of getting something that might peek up over that radar and get a little more attention, I thought, Christmas album, that's kind of a different thing. And I knew if we were going to make a Christmas album that we weren't just going to record a bunch of familiar tunes. I wanted to make something that was exactly like what our any next Burrito album would be, that a fully realized compositionally sound, great collection of music, you know, an album that really has a thematic strain to it as opposed to just individual song. It really fits to listen to this thing from start to finish. So we went through the whole year. First, we had I knew I wanted to do that Beatles medley because that's gold. That's wonderful. I knew another one that was really left field choice was the song by Pete Townshend called Christmas from Tommy, the rock opera. And for a group that has a pedal steel as the most featured instrument to do that has to be a little different. It kind of raised some eyebrows. Then I mentioned that a Christmas Day song that was on a Glen Campbell album. And then, of course, Santa Looked a Lot Like Daddy from Buck Owens. That was the first choices. And then I wrote up an outline. We have a guitar player named Steve Allen, and our record label is in England. And our representative there, who's done so much for us, got us our deal, record deal, his name Bob Boiling. They have Boxing Day, the Feast of Stephen, at the next day after Christmas. And we don't really pay any attention to that. It's nothing in the United States, but it's something in England. And I remember the Grateful Dead had a song called Saint Stephen. It just hit me. It just resonated that, okay, I want to write something called The Feast of Stephen about the day after Christmas, Boxing Day, with R. Stephen, with Steve Allen. And then Walter Egan, who had been in the Burrito Brothers, currently isn't, but he's usually a guest on one or two things, a little guitar or a little bit of background vocal on our last couple albums. I got the idea of writing a song with him called Spirit of the Season. My little inside thing there was that Walter played with the group, the classic rock group Spirit. So it's sort of got a deeper meaning for the insiders to know. And I wanted to write one with Tony Paoletta, the steel pedal steel player, and Peter Young, the drummer, called Christmas Moon. I had an idea that we wanted that to be as much like a traditional, beautiful standard as we could come up with. And so that was on the outline. And then there was one more to follow Christmas Moon. The next thing is Christmas Star, and that's about the Star of Bethlehem. But it's just an abstract excursion. It's about a minute and 20 seconds, a minute and a half, and it's in this jazz 5/4 time with recitation about the wise men and following the star. And then it finishes up with a couple lines of singing, and it's just sort of an interlude. But I liked the idea of Christmas Moon being followed by Christmas Star on the album. So those four titles were initially just on the drawing board. And I was thrilled in the long run to see that they all worked. They came to fruition. My plan worked. That's essentially how we visualized the album.
Do you think you might do like a Christmas album part two?
Wow. I'd never say no, but it'd be hard to imagine covering as much. I mean, this is so complete. I'm so happy with it. It seems, and I also am not real big on sort of trying to repeat something. But that said, I'm not sure that's altogether true because I think in some ways, all of our albums are a little bit of a carryover from the one before. It's like you know what works and you like it and you kind of follow that path a little more. I don't think they're the same by any stretch, but I don't know. That's a tough one to answer. I like this so much that maybe yes. I've heard people say this odd thing about Christmas albums is that they only have about a 3 week to 1 month life. Right after Thanksgiving, everybody starts listening to them. And then when Christmas is over, you put them away. So perhaps you just bring it out again a year later. I'm not sure. I was thinking of that it could almost be promoted all over again with a couple new videos or something. I don't know, maybe or a couple new songs, but not a whole other album. I don't know. I'm not sure.
Well, the good thing is, that you're open to whatever's going to happen, and the fact that
Oh, yeah.
you're so content with what you've created first time out of the gate, which is wonderful.
Yeah, I'm really happy with it. I'm confident that it's a very, very good album. I almost, gosh, dare I say this? I almost feel like I'm so sure that it's good that I know it's going to get recognized. I just hope I see it in my lifetime.
So, a Christmas question that has nothing to do with music. What is your favorite type of holiday dessert?
Ah, holiday dessert. What kind of cake is Christmas? I like cake.
Ooh, cake is good.
Yeah. Is spice cake a Christmas? It could be,
It
couldn't it?
could be, yeah.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah. I'm not sure about, I never liked that funny thing they call a fruit cake.
Yeah, no. Me
No.
either. I think fruitcake is mostly meant to just be purchased as a tradition. I'm
Yeah,
not
that, but
sure
it's
people eat
connected
it.
to, yeah, right. Look at it. It's but it's associated with Christmas. Yeah. I'm not sure what desserts are, other desserts are associated with Christmas. Thanksgiving has more of that, doesn't it? Pumpkin pie and stuff like that. Yeah.
I like your answer though. Spice cake is good all year round, but it definitely fits the Christmas holiday vibe.
Yeah, with that cream cheese frosting.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
That is good stuff.
Yeah.
So back to music now. Will you guys be touring anytime soon? Like will the listeners have a chance to check you guys out in a city near them?
I sure hope so. I'm not certain. Right now, we don't have anything lined up. The status of the band is such that these guys are all long-term Nashville pros. We're really good friends who love it when we get together, but we're hardly only in this group. Everybody is out there doing lots of work. In fact, it's kind of hard to schedule things sometimes because everybody's busy. This is really top-level Nashville pros who, of course, have other clients and people they work with. And at our age, we're not eager to just slog it on the road. We don't want to climb into a van and go play night after night. So we're hoping to find short term, like a week somewhere, especially if it was like in Australia or England or other countries sound really appealing to get to travel and play. Any offers we're really open to, but I guess that's the best way I can put it. We're really not open to just like if we were half our age, climbing in a van and driving all over the country and playing night after night in any little club. That's not gonna fly with us. So it's a tough answer. I have to admit, I'm not avidly pursuing agents to find us work. I really need to work a little harder at that, though. But it seems to me, it's been my experience in the past that once we get a little more attention, like you're helping us have right now, and like the album being out and the videos, there's usually a few pretty nice offers that come in. So it's not like a tour is in the offing, but I hope we'll get out there and play places. If anybody hears this and wants to contact me about us playing there, I'm all for it. I'm not sure, can they find out how to get to me through you or something?
Yeah, of course. I can put in the show notes links to the band's official website and social
Yeah,
media
and
links.
also online presence, yeah, the website and Facebook, that kind of stuff. They could, I'm sure they could find us.
Yes, definitely.
But,
Definitely. They'll be able to track you down for sure.
oh, by the way, I need to make sure, because it was requested and it's only right to do, it's part of the logical thing in an interview like this, to point out that the album is available in CD form and all the digital formats. It's out there. It's it's on all of them. Unfortunately, there isn't a vinyl version. I wish there was, but if you want the album, which I certainly prefer, the whole album, it's available on SFM Records on CD. In fact, it's listed as out today, which kind of surprises me because it's been out a couple weeks on all the digital formats. And every time I've looked at Amazon, it says you can pre-order, will be available on December 8th. So no more pre-order. It's now out. And it's an interesting day for it to be out to me because December 8 is also the day we remember John Lennon. He was killed on December 8. It's a sad memory, but it's time to remember him. And because I was always a fan of the Doors, Jim Morrison's birthday is today as well.
So it's very monumentous then.
Yeah. So it's the John Lennon, Jim Morrison, Burrito Brother Day. At least this year.
Yes. I love asking this question of musicians because I just never know what I'm going to get for an answer. But what are some albums in your personal collection that might surprise someone?
Oh, that might surprise. Because I was just about to say the Beatles. You probably can already tell. I hold them in such high regard. They're just monumental. That's for the ages right there. But so that's not surprising. The first one that comes to mind, I wonder, have you ever heard of Trout Mask Replica by Captain Beefheart? I should find the. Oh, here. They made a series of books called 33 and a Third, these little books that, just tell about one group's album. There's like Exile on Main Street and Abbey Road and Pet Sounds. So he was sort of a cohort, a friend of Frank Zappa. You must have heard of him.
Oh, yeah.
It's really oddball music. It's so strange. The first time you hear it, it just seems awful, if that makes any sense. And then for some reason, people keep coming back to it and examining it and wondering what exactly is going on. And it's a fascinating story of how they re the, all this stuff that at first listen sounds so horribly disjointed was all fully rehearsed. And the more you hear it, if you have any m musical ears and inclination, you can start telling, no, that was all intentional. This isn't just people flailing away and making noise. It was all figured out. And that makes it start registering. It's perhaps the hardest listen I ever did in my life. It's like I say, the first time I heard it, I thought it was horrible. But it's rather interesting. So that's probably an unusual. I wonder what else might be. Oh, I'll tell you, here's one. I hope people don't think these are my number one focus. You asked me to name the least likely. So I recently got a collection of Herman's Hermits. They really were a band. That wasn't just cute little Peter Noon with backing people and some producer making. As strange as it sounds, they like the other Mersey and British Invasion groups, were a group. They played on their records. They've toured and a five-piece band. He, although it is kind of a limited voice with a sort of cuteness factor, was not a bad singer at all. Very in tune and yeah, very melodic. It's interesting because they fell into the same group of people. Their producer was Mickey Most, who produced the Yardbirds and produced Donovan and oh, I'm probably forgetting some other key groups. Jeff Beck, I think he had something to do with the earliest Led Zeppelin. He it was a cool group of people who interacted. And in fact, the more I learned about from this more recent reissue that came with a lot of informative liner notes, Jimmy Page is on a bunch of these songs, and so is John Paul Jones. And so, surprise, surprise, a group that seemed like just bubblegum fluff kind of has a little more to them.
That is
So
really
that
cool.
that wouldn't be expected, would it? That's a little outside. That's almost the other extreme from Captain Beefheart. It's almost too sweet and easy. And then Captain Beefheart is rough and hard.
Those are some fascinating choices.
They're kind of outside, aren't they?
Yeah.
I have to say, my taste in music was mostly from what I regard as the Renaissance era of the advent of the Beatles going till about the end of the 70s. For me, somewhere in there around 1980, it started getting so much a product for marketing and so much less a format for wonderful musicians to interact. And that's an exaggeration, because there's always been good music, and I think it I never had trouble finding good music. It just wasn't as prevalent. It seems to me from about 65 to 75, everything that was popular was also real good to musicians. It was well done by real musicians. It wasn't all that, like disco and rap and punk all turned it into less finesse and less true musicianship, and more coming up with an angle and a product, which is, I think, for quite some time, tended to rule the mainstream. But it never, I don't think it ever could take all the way over. You can always find good music out there. I'd like to think, I do think we're an example. If good musicians want to hear what it sounds like for good musicians to make a fully realized album, check our album out, because that it is.
So it's definitely not a surprise to say that the Beatles had an influence on you when you were younger, but are there
Oh,
any
without a doubt.
other groups that did as well?
Oh gosh, yes. I love Jimi Hendrix. I think he's the greatest guitar player of all time. This almost falls in that other category you asked about, or it might surprise. There's a group called Procol Harum that I just adored all the way down the line. And they started right out the bat with one of the greatest songs ever done, A Whiter Shade of Pale. And
Yes.
that wonderful lead singer, Gary Brooker, who passed away a couple of years ago. Just what a great. I loved that group in every incarnation. They were still going until he passed. There's other groups that brings to mind some of those British groups like Cream and Traffic and Led Zeppelin and the Rolling Stones. The Rolling Stones rate way up there. And then, American groups, of course, the Byrds. The Byrds are our mothership. The Flying Burrito Brothers first began as a spin-off of the Byrds. Both Chris Hillman and Graham Parsons had just left the Byrds to start their own band. They rate just sky high. And then that's a whole family tree. The Byrds lead you to Buffalo Springfield and Crosby, Stills and Nash, Neil Young. I like those other country. I like those, the country rock groups of the early 70s, which was kind of the hotbed of that genre, so to speak, when the Burrito Brothers started. It included like Poco and Pure Prairie League and the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band. And Michael Nesmith, when he left the Monkees, he was quite the country rocker. Holy gosh, even the Everly Brothers, they're so wonderful. Oh, and then they're sort of, I wouldn't say copycat, but they started out that way, Simon and Garfunkel. And oh my, I'm forgetting one of the most important, biggest ones of all, Bob Dylan.
Oh, yeah.
He's just iconic. He's such a major figure in the history of all this music that I love. And I'm sure I'm leaving something out. There were so many good. Badfinger was a great group.
Oh, I love them, yeah.
Yeah, there's so many. Let me look over. Oh, Todd Rundgren was really wonderful, or still is, I would say. I even liked some of the, oh, Steppenwolf. Ever heard of them? They're good. I liked some of those horn bands when they started out, Blood, Sweat, and Tears and Chicago. Gosh, there's all kinds of, and oh, I'm forgetting people like Marvin Gaye and Smokey Robinson.
Oh yeah, Smokey Robinson is excellent.
Oh yeah, Isaac Hayes and Shaft. That's wonderful stuff. And of course, due and thanks to my dad, I got into people like Miles Davis and John Coltrane in jazz. There's a lot there too. Weather Report and all that. I don't know. I could go on and on and on.
So something I'm curious about, because you've been in the music industry for so long, what is one of the best pieces of advice you've received about it?
I've always thought the best piece of advice I ever got was from my father when I was about 18. I was a really late bloomer. I said that it seemed so natural in our house, and I think I must have tinkered around on piano and stuff. But I have a brother named Peter, 1 year younger than me, who was a child prodigy. And he's the one who really, like I said, I had one brother who did learn how to do it all formally and took lessons and everything, but he also had the ability to just play by ear and heart. And he was so advanced at such a young age, being 1 year younger than me, and I hadn't yet started. I was kind of intimidated. I would tinkle around a little bit on piano, and I thought, oh, I could never do what Peter does. I guess, I'm not really. And then as I got older, something like, I believe I was a senior in high school. I've read that Eric Clapton says he was when he started, so that makes me feel better. But I only finally started going for it when I was about 17, and it took pretty quickly. I realized I could keep a beat, I could keep time, and I had good enough ears to find the chords. And I mostly just I differentiated myself from Peter's expertise by figuring what I want to do is bang out the chords and sing. I want to be able to accompany singing, and that would be different from his virtuoso expertise, two different bags. And I started getting capable of doing that. And here's the advice. My dad, he said, Chris, why do you just bang away and kind of keep doing the same thing? You've been doing this for about a year now. I said, well, because I could never be as good as Peter, and I don't know. I this is okay. And he said, no, if you're going to keep doing it, if you're going to keep sitting in front of that piano and play, you add to your vocabulary, you keep learning, because the key thing to remember is there's no finish line. There's no such thing as ever learning at all. Don't believe anybody who thinks they're done and they've learned it all is either an egomaniac or a fool, because there's always something more you can learn. So all you're doing is climbing on board the train. It's not anything you need to be frustrated about how much you know today, because there's always more to learn. So just climb on board. And that seemed so freeing. That was wonderful advice.
That is fantastic, and it's something that's so applicable to everything in life, not just music,
Oh, yeah. It would be quite wrong for anybody to be so conceited that they think they now know it all.
I mean, I'm sure we all go through stages of that in our teenage years, though.
And there's an element of that that we bring to our recordings, where we don't believe we know it all, but we believe we have a lot of know-how, and we're comfortable with being, there's a confidence in being able to make these recordings. There's no real butterflies. I remember when I was real young, this idea of turning the lights down low and hoping to get a mood and all that. If you've really learned your part, if you really know what you're doing on this song and you've visualized it entirely, you don't need any of that. You just go do it. There's no n necessary mood, so to speak. I mean, I'm sure you want it to be comfortable, but it's, turning the lights down low and having some candles or something, that's not gonna really make any difference. You need to know your part.
What is one of your absolute favorite things about your career field?
Oh, that it's also my favorite thing. It's a little strange. I remember one time my brother Peter said to me, well, when you're not working on music, you listen to it, don't you? Or you go to a show, do you ever not have it be about music? And I kind of thought, almost no. And how many fields are that? I mean, there's no real dividing line between recreation and fun and enjoyment and what I do for work. I mean, recreation and fun have no pressure and no need for homework or anything. So there is a slight difference, but they're both music.
That's excellent. And it's always nice to be able to do what you love for a living. It's something that not too many people have the opportunity to say that they can do, you know?
I agree. I count my blessings on that. I am aware of that and appreciate it very much.
You said you wrote, back to the album, you said you wrote some songs on the new Christmas album. And I was just curious, what are some of your favorite and least favorite parts about writing a song?
Gosh, I don't know how to answer that exactly. Least favorite doesn't seem very applicable. Process has turned into a, you just work them. You get a solid starting point. You figure out what vibe, what mood, what color you're chasing, what style, and maybe even tempo, and then start exploring what chords fit it. And it's real nice to work with other people because you share these ideas and you trigger each other and keep each other going. And it's been a long time since I really can't remember. It's been a long, long time since I just wrote a song and decided done. That's not necessary at all. That's almost, I wouldn't say delusional, but I don't agree with it. I think you finish the song, you come up with a template, a version of it, and then you look at it and think and listen to it and think, boy, that couple words, a couple lines could be improved. You can just keep tweaking it until it's really all the way right. And in fact, being this far along in my career and having, like I say, I started wanting to sing and I started coming up with awkward early songs and then they got better and better. Although the earlier, the recordings from when I was in my 20s don't sound as good as I wish they did. It sounds like the guy who thinks maybe if we turn the lights down, I'll get a better mood or something, you know. But having so much to draw upon, that's still me. That's still my invention. And I go back through in recent years, I've just gone back over my own backlog, so to speak, and thought, now that's a good start for a better song. I've kind of got this little file, so to speak, of good starting points for it. It's not like I'm needing, like I had a friend say, boy, you just never have any writer's block, do you? And I said, no, I guess not. I don't really, because I have this to draw, this well to draw upon, and there's only so much you can do, so it's plenty. For instance, I forgot to mention two of the songs, or is it three? I guess it's two of them, are my own from a long time ago. The second song on the album is called Bethlehem Bell. It's really pretty much of a traditional concept about we still hear it ringing, even though it was hundreds and hundreds of years ago. You know, why must it take Christmas to bring out the good in people? And it's a sweet sentiment that I wrote 35 years ago with Greg Hicks, a guy named Greg Hicks, and always thought, well, you know, if I ever did some kind of Christmas album, it sure was it somewhere was back in the back of my mind that, yeah, that'd be a good one to use. And then I wrote a couple songs 15 years ago. Oh, there are three because there's two more, Santa and Merry Christmas, with a guy named Joe Weber and a girl named Ashley Hart. We wrote something like a dozen songs that year. What would that be, about the very big middle of the first decade of, you know, 2005 or somewhere in there. And for whatever reason, a couple of them were Christmas songs, and pulled those out. And one of them was really awkward. We treated it like it was some sort of goofy novelty song, and we were giggling and laughing, and it just wasn't serious at all. And I realized it's enough of a starting point for a much better song, and revisited it and wrote it into a better song called Santa on this album. So the well we drew from is pretty broad.
I like that. I like how you don't just, abandon ideas. You just sort of put them on the shelf for later because you never know when you could use something.
Yeah, I've said that about the one that felt like it was required, since the Flying Burrito Brothers started as a new kind of hybrid of country rock, country played for a rock audience that sounded more like country than rock, but was absolutely sold to a rock audience. And the guys playing it were all long-haired hippie-looking guys. And that was part of this new kind of movement of that day. It was largely based on things like Merle Haggard and Buck Owens. That California Bakersfield country was not that different, and except maybe in lyric content. That's where the difference really lay. Graham talking about running away from the draft, you know, the conservative country people of the day certainly wouldn't say. In fact, Merle was singing about, we don't smoke marijuana in Muskogee, you know. So it's two different audiences. But if you just hear the sound of that music, it was pretty similar. And I have some recordings of Graham, where Graham Parsons live talking to, trying to convince the audience out there that, hey, Buck Owens was actually pretty good if you give him a chance, if you listen. So I knew, and Dwight Yoakam
Oh,
really based
yeah.
his style on all that. He's, that's that Bakersfield country rock thing. The Byrds went there too. And so I knew that for the Burrito Brothers to do a Christmas album, it had to have that classic Buck Owens song. But that was kind of the only one that hit me is like, yeah, we got to do that one. In fact, in a way, it was a strange thing in that every other song we knew was kind of new to people. I mean, of course they've heard the Beatles, but they haven't heard it this way. They hadn't heard what we did to it. And that same with the Who. There's no like just, oh, that's that song again kind of things on this album, with maybe that one exception. A lot of country artists have done Santa Looked a Lot Like Daddy, but we had to. We it had to, it was required.
Excellent. So I'm going to ask you two more questions. One is serious and one is fun. Which one would you like first?
Fun, I guess.
Okay. Fun one, since it is around the holiday time, what would you bring to a potluck?
How about white beans and ham?
Ooh, very good.
Just had that recently.
Do you like having it with cornbread too?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, that's part of it. Yes. Yes.
That's such a great meal. And then it's like cooks all day on the stove, and then the whole house smells amazing.
Oh, yeah, that's great. Yeah.
Yeah, that is a good one.
And one of my favorites is spaghetti, but you can't really bring spaghetti to a potluck. I don't think that would be such a good choice.
Right. Doesn't really transport all that well.
No, yeah.
Excellent. Well, one more question for you, Chris. In your own words, what does it mean to live a creative life?
It's a blessing, and you never take it for granted. Each day is special. I mean, the older I get, the older anybody gets, you realize it's precious. I'm acutely aware of it, and I think that happens with some more age than it kind of does to people who are a lot younger. I'm so appreciative of the lucky fact that so far I haven't lost the tiniest shred of my ability to do it. I kind of, I hate to use the word fear, but I almost kind of fear that day when if the singing voice starts sounding rickety and like an old man or something, or if some sort of arthritis causes the inability to play or something. Although I think the fact that I play piano, and I think that's almost a continual therapy. I think you're using your fingers and moving them so much that it's less likely to get rigid. But I'm very, very appreciative of getting to do this, and hope it goes a little while longer. I mean, I think I'll also be perceptive where I'll know if it's time to bow out, but it just isn't yet.
That's excellent. And yeah, definitely going as long as you can in a creative field is one of the blessings that we have.
Oh yeah, I think there's it's almost a cliche, isn't it? The music keeps you young. I really think it does. I think I suppose not in every case. I got lucky where I could do this and get by and not have to do the really, really hard work. I remember some time back, I was probably in my 40s or even up to 50, where I would still take these jobs where they were hiring a keyboard player. And it is kind of frustrating because I always felt like I could be the guy doing even better than the person I'm backing up, but I needed the job. And then there's also been some people probably face it less than I, because they are just fully focused as strictly a musician player. Not my self-image is that I'm a band member. I sing and I come up with songs and I play darn good keyboard, but it's not strictly what I'm all about. Cog, I'm a part of a group in my image. And so when I'm slotted into being expected to be the sensational keyboard player for hire, I've had occasions where that didn't work as nicely as I wish. They kind of think it's not coming as fast as they wished, or that the guy they had before was somehow better or something. It's and I'm so glad to all that is long behind me now. I remember a real good example of how hard the keyboard player's job in a small, like bar band kind of thing, or small show band, was, I would explain it like this. If you have a keyboard player, a guitar player, a bass and drums, the bass player plays the bass part, the guitar player plays the guitar part, the drummer plays the drum part. Everything else is yours, pal. Is there a flute? Is there a violin? Is there a horn sound? Is there an organ? Is there a clavinet? Is there a piano? Can't you do that on your synthesizer? Everything else is your homework. That I didn't dig. It's like, especially during the disco era. I mean, think how many funny little sounds were in all those records and things. And the thing that really stuck with me was, okay, this is more work than everybody else has for very little reward. I mean, other than pay, but I mean, we musicians want that satisfaction, want that reward of feeling something special. And this is just mimicking some other group. That you all you're doing is trying to sound like the record. And it's hard if it's a complicated record, and my keyboard skills, I wouldn't say they were that limited, but they weren't Mr. Virtuoso top. And so I just felt like, I hate this. I don't want to do these kind of jobs. I want to go be in a cool band. I got by with it though. I mean, I took some pride in that too. I mean, I don't mean to paint a picture of regarding myself as a not very good on keyboards. I think I'm quite good at it, but and I rose to the occasion, but it was so much work to do. And I think I probably had to do more homework to be up to snuff than someone like my child prodigy, brilliant brother, and there are a lot of those people out there. And that was my competition if I'm trying to be Mr. Keyboard Whiz. So that didn't really work for me. That's a hard job.
But the good news is you found where you were supposed to be and you found your
Yeah,
niche.
I
So.
sure did. Yeah, and have for quite some time now. So lucky.
Excellent. Well, Chris, thank you for being on the show. Listeners, please check the show notes for links to the Burrito Brothers website, as well as links for where to buy their not only their Christmas album, but albums past. And as always, thanks for listening. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Like the show? Have a question? Stop by the Facebook and Instagram pages. Links are in the show notes, or search for Creative Piecemeal Podcast on social media and click follow for all the latest.